This is a podcast from The Red House, the former home of Benjamin Britten and Peter Piers. I'm Lucy Walker. Join me, colleagues and other guests for a monthly chat about all things Britten and Piers, plus music, culture, heritage in general, and anything else that might come up. Welcome to the From the Red House podcast. I'm absolutely delighted to be joined in person, for once, this doesn't often happen, by Elise Caluwets, who is a wonderful singer from Belgium and is passing through our country just at the moment. So I'm just going to start, Elise, just by asking you to tell our listeners who you are and what you do.
Hello. Hi, Lucy. Thank you for having me. So my name is Elise Caluwets and I'm a soprano. I sing lots of concerts usually, and I do opera, I do lots of recital, and last year, because there was a COVID year, I've started doing a lot of creative projects, which has been amazing.
So I do want to ask you about your various lockdown projects that you've been doing, but the one thing that really caught my ear was when we spoke about a month ago, we were talking about Britten's cabaret songs, we were having a conversation, and you happened to mention that you were doing some recordings of some Alma Mahler songs. So I really just wanted to ask you about how that project came about.
That's right. I first came across Alma Mahler when I was a teenager and read her diaries, which was an amazing, overwhelming experience, actually. It was like a universe opening, because Alma Mahler has had one of the most interesting lives. And then about 1.5 years ago, I was in London and met her granddaughter, Marina Mahler, who I spoke to about her grandmother since I read the diaries. And then she asked me if I knew any of her songs and if I'd be interested in maybe singing them or maybe seeing some scores. And I realized that I'd never looked at the music, because in the first year, when I was studying in the first year of the conservatory, I had asked my singing teacher to maybe sing some Alma Mahler, and she advised me not to, because she said, oh, that is just the wife of Gustav Mahler. Typical in a way, and very disappointing, because it made me wait for many, many years before I discovered Alma's music. And so through Marina, I got some scores. And when I started looking at the music, it's just fantastic. The music is really, really special and complex and romantic and highly mature, because she was actually very young when she wrote that music. It's been amazing to discover that repertoire and to discover that it is actually wonderful, fantastic repertoire that should be standard repertoire in Leeds, in song recitals.
So what can you say something about the sound world? As you said, it's kind of she was quite young when she wrote them. So when roughly were these written? Was it late 19th or?
Yeah, so the songs, most of the songs were written before she met Gustav Mahler. So between the age of 17 and 21 was when she wrote most. Now, Alma was a very gifted pianist as well. So she would go to the opera, and she loved Wagner's Tristan and Isolde, and so she would play it on the piano by heart and sing with it, and that was her favorite music. And so a lot of the songs have something Wagnerian, something with endless phrases that never resolve, and this incredible intense kind of romantic waves of sound and very, very passionate, intense poems as well. So it sounds very mature, although they were written at the end of the 19th century when she was just a girl.
Wow.
Or not just a girl.
Indeed. Yeah, that's remarkable. I didn't know she was so young when she'd written her compositions. And that dismissal of your singing teacher is kind of depressing, but it did happen. And it's really only relatively recently, isn't it, that I think there's a sense that when you look back at music history, you could choose to ignore all the female composers that were trying to gain a foothold, but for numerous cultural reasons and dismissal reasons were unable to. And I think it's really interesting how that history is being reclaimed. And then, of course, you get the backlash of people saying, oh, well, it's not as good as so-and-so. And you'd think, well, they didn't have the chance to write the Ring Cycle.
That's right.
They didn't have the opportunity.
That's right, because actually Alma also stopped composing because when she met Gustav Mahler, they met at a dinner of mutual friends. Gustav Mahler immediately fell in love with Alma. She must have been something very special because everybody all through her life speaks about her magnetism, her charisma, her very, very special, sprightly, intelligent personality. So Gustav noticed that, fell in love, and wrote her a letter saying, I would like to marry you, but you must stop composing because there can only be one composer in this couple, which she accepted. And I think part of the reason why she accepted was because she was so young. So I don't think she knew her own worth and her own talent. And then part of it must have been the spirit of time, where the best thing a young girl could do was get a good marriage. So that's what happened. And then she stopped, and of course the marriage failed. You know.
Yeah. And she never took it up after he died, or when she...
No, she didn't. Mm-hmm. No, I think her moment was gone, and he regretted it very much. So when Mahler, in the last 2 years of his life, he was ill, and Alma was having an affair with Gropius, the architect, whom she married afterwards as well. And he knew that his wife was slipping away, his life was slipping away, so he went to Sigmund Freud to speak about it. And when he talked about it, Freud said, well, yes, you've cut your wife's wings. Of course, the marriage is not working out. And then he regretted it very much, asked for the first time to actually see the scores of her songs, and then was really, really sorry because he cried and said, I can't believe I've done this to your talent. And then he helped her publish the first cycle of songs. So he tried to make it up, but I, you know.
A little too late, perhaps.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah, I guess so, yeah sadly.
Well, too late for them.
Too late for them, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's an incredibly powerful story. As you say, it's of its time, but it still speaks to the dismissal that will still be happening in some quarters. So it's really important to get this repertoire out. So the CD will be coming out next year, so in 2022 will be...
That's
well.
That's right. Yes, in February.
February.
Yes.
So we were talking just before we started recording about lockdown, because we are still in it to some degree. This is June 2021. And I've been talking to a number of artists who've had kind of a really interesting time, difficult time, but have come out of it with some changes, or having had the time to explore some other projects. So I'm really interested to hear about your lullaby project you were talking about earlier, which I remember very vividly when it was online during lockdown. So do you want to say a little about how that came about?
Yeah, so yes, that was lovely actually to do them and make them and discover lullaby repertoire, because almost every composer wrote a lullaby because at some point in their lives somebody had a baby or they had a baby themselves. And that was actually interesting to discover that. I actually came about it because a few weeks into lockdown, when all of a sudden all of our diaries were empty and I would find myself in the countryside in a very beautiful place, kind of waiting for this virus to go away, while my elder sister is actually a professor in medicine. She retrained as a COVID doctor, and she was working in the hospitals, and I would get updates from her about how severe the situation was, and that contrast of me sitting, having nothing to do, and her working in those hospitals made me really want to do something as well, however small. And then I was, you know, when COVID just happened, there was so much insecurity. Nobody knew what that virus was actually going to do long term, and people were panicked. There was lots of anxiety, lots of loneliness for people who couldn't have any social contact anymore, or people who were just too afraid to go out of the house. And so I wanted to create something small that would give them instant intimacy, which I think lullabies do, because they are always written for a small child or a loved one, and it's always a going to bed situation where everything is soft and intimate and close by, and so I've simply, you know, I've just recorded with a friend of mine, Eleonora Pertz, a young pianist who lives in Berlin, and she would just record the piano part and I'd do the singing part in London. And we just put out two videos a week, which we had promised initially, and it turned out to be a lot of work, actually, because it was all a lot of repertoire I had to learn all of a sudden, because I never sang many lullabies. But the response of people was so heartfelt and so personal, and I got letters from people who said they were playing these songs to their grandchildren, or that it was of comfort, you know, which was the idea. And actually, from that tiny online kind of reaching out to the world and wanting to, you know, embrace and make things better, I kind of realized that that all of a sudden you have the power to do something, and that it can have such a direct and beautiful effect on people, and then from there actually a few other creative projects emerged, partly also because my diary is emptied, and I was occasionally doing some things when the restrictions were less severe, or when organizers would want to do something, but basically there was time, which in the end I think it's all the horrors aside, I think it's one of the most amazing things that COVID has given us. It's time to just be and breathe and to create something for you, to find out what you want to do. It was actually a time of great depth for me.
Remarkable, yeah. And I have heard, in a way, sort of similar stories, though nothing I think is as kind of... that's such a fully rounded project that you did, because I know that a lot of people, as soon as COVID happened, they sort of jumped online and felt that they had to just keep reminding people that they were there and keeping singing and so on. But yours, the sort of impetus behind yours is really moving, and the fact that you and your pianist were spatially separated but also managed to create something really personal as well is just such a very beautiful product of that time.
Oh, thank you.
No, really, really, absolutely. Mm. And something else that you've been doing more recently, which, again, we were just talking about beforehand, which is very interested in, a combination of opera and fashion house. So
that's right.
Tell us about
and
that.
Film. Yeah, so this year we've had this amazing thing called live streams, which is, on one hand, fantastic, because you can reach an international audience and all of a sudden people in South Korea can see your videos and can, you know, watch the concert live. And I thought that was quite magical. On the other hand, I thought it'd be interesting to create online formats where the visual element would be as important as the audio. Because I think I kind of speak for a lot of people when you say, oh, not another live stream. You know, we might have seen them already. It doesn't take away that it's wonderful to have online concerts, but I thought it'd be really interesting to create something where there was a balance in the visual and the audio. So I was asked this year, which was a very nice surprise, by a very old fashion brand in Belgium to be brand ambassador to them. They're called Scapa. And I like them because they create very ethical fashion. It's all sustainable, ecological. made in Europe, all that. So I could agree with that. The only thing I didn't want was just photos on Instagram of me wearing their clothes. I thought it can be something more. So I asked them to do something with and for opera. So we came up with this idea of creating, of actually making a video clip simply, but on the Mozart aria. And since Scapa has a lot of androgyny in their collections, we've worked around a castrato aria of Mozart. So the character is a man. It's De per questo istante solo from Clemenza di Tito. So we've taken that aria, had a visual artist create a film on it. We've recorded it with orchestra, with Casco Phil, who are a Belgian orchestra. And Scapa made a capsule collection that is neither feminine nor masculine. So it's a very androgynous, gender fluid project, and the film is really about inner conflict and self-acceptance. It's quite based on Orlando by Virginia Woolf. So we've made that, and then that was actually a very interesting and exciting experience. And then a production company came to me and asked me if I'd be interested in making more of these projects. So we have a new project coming up, which we still have to make, but that will be Ariana Naxos by Haydn.
Wow, that's great. Because as you say, that's just there's obviously an online recital is fantastic, and it can be a beautiful thing, but this is something so much more. It's kind of combining all sorts of stimuli and art forms. So brilliant.
Thank you.
Very exciting. Great. Just coming to towards the end, and this is what we always do at the end of these podcasts, is to talk about music a bit more, okay. But specifically to contribute to our podcast playlist, which we like to have to build up throughout the season, and it can be as eclectic as you like. So anything that you feel like recommending that you think other people should listen to that we can link to would be great.
Okay, well, a very recent discovery was conductor Charles Mikaris. I don't know why he might be not so famous on Europe mainland, but it was an eye-opener for me, and the way he does Mozart and actually most music, especially opera, is mind-blowing. It is just superb. And then I've also been listening to this fantastic English mezzo-soprano called Anne Murray, whom everybody probably knows, and it is just sublime. I think every time she sings, it's fresh, expressive, wonderfully sung, with an amazing technique, and just inspiring, incredibly inspiring. So those have been my two latest obsessions.
Great. Oh, well, those names are two very familiar to Aldbrough.
Also
familiar people, because Charles Mikaris premiered worked with Britain, and Anne Murray has sung so much Britain as well, so that's the two very close to the family, as it were.
that's right.
So I'm just going to contribute a couple. Just as you were talking about lullabies, I just remembered, and I think maybe you performed one of these, was that beautiful one from the Defia set.
Yes,
Jethis Cantillones. Is it Nino or Nina?
Nani.
That's right. Nana. So I'd like to have, because that is an exquisite, and I do remember vaguely humming that to my niece once when she was very, very small. She won't remember. I don't think I sang it very well, but I think that is a beautiful lullaby, so I'll include a recording of that. And then, just because the weather is so nice, there was, on a completely different type of music, Sting and a singer called Melody Gardot, who does cabaret and kind of light music. I think she's great. And they did a duet called Little Something, and I caught it on the TV, and they recorded it in some beautiful Italian villa or something. And this was back in the winter when the weather was terrible. But now the sun is out, I've been playing it in my car, and it's the most sunshiny song. So I could have had that.
Very nice.
But thank you so much. Elise, for talking about such an interesting range of projects, and I'm really looking forward to your alma mater coming out, because we will be next year looking at female creativity. I mean, we're always looking at female creativity, but I think we're really concentrating on it next year, and I think there are so many stories still to be told, so thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having me. What a pleasure.